Blog Talk Radio.
A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. Our helper, he amid the flood. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hand. On earth is not his
afternoon, dear saints, and welcome to another broadcast of Reformation News with I, Radio Reformer, being in studio, and we just encountered a little technical difficulty there, but I am so glad to be with you today, so glad. And our computers here seem to have crashed, and we're working feverishly to get them up and rolling again. Well, praise be to God. It's a beautiful day today, and we have been plugging along, presenting our propositions to you, the Christian Church, to see if we can stir up some conversation, some talk, to see if we can stir up your thinking. Because there's abuses going on in the African American Church. You know, this is the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. And is anyone in your church talking about it? No. You know what people are talking about in our church, the African American church? You know what people are talking about? Who's getting elevated? Who's being made a bishop? Who is being made archbishop? And this is what we're encountering today. We just have a bunch of elevations going on. And while these people get elevated, God's people get oppressed. It's a form of oppression. It's a form of beating up on the saints. It's a form of slavery. It's a form of bondage. And this is what we're protesting. And today I want to present to you proposition number 52. As soon as the computer reboots, we'll continue. And, you know, to date we have yet to hear from the Joint College of African American Bishops, for all of their claims that they have scholars among them, for all of their claims that they have doctorates and earned doctorates, and for all of their claims, we simply see no evidence. We see no evidence that really substantiates that because, again, we presented 51 propositions. Today, I will be presenting number 52, and we haven't heard a word. You would think that I've taken apart Mr. J. Delano Ellis's book, The Bishopric. I mean, I've mocked the book. I've made fun of the book. The book is worthless. The book has no gospel in it. The book is just littered with man-made traditions and doctrines of demons. This is a worthless document. I spent a good deal of money purchasing this book, and there are many days when I regret having spent the $20 to purchase it because it's just worthless. And then there are days that I rejoice in that I bought it because now I have a point of reference from which to do these broadcasts. Because we're taking Mr. Ellis's book apart limb by limb. And that's when you do when you look at heresy, when you look at false doctrine, when you look at doctrines of demons that have come into the church and now the doctrines of demons are being elevated over the doctrines of God. And this is where we're at. This is where we are at. Thank God the computer's rebooting. We should be up and running shortly, and we can get on with this broadcast. But in the time being, like I've been saying, we have been taking Mr. Ellis's book apart limb by limb by limb, and the book is screaming, Mr. Ellis's book. And what book are you asking? What's the name of the book? The Bishopric. A handbook on creating episcopacy in the African American Pentecostal Church. I am beating so much up on this book that this book is screaming for help. This book is screaming for help, but the author cannot be found. The author refuses to call the broadcast. The author refuses to come and save his own writing from the beating that I'm giving the book. I'm giving the book. I mean, a Holy Ghost beating. And Mr. Ellis never calls. We invite him to call every day. He has an open-ended invitation, which means that while I'm doing these 95 theses, Mr. Ellis can call in at any time. He doesn't need permission to call in. I'm giving him permission. Even after I do the 95 theses, he can call in any day. So let's see if Mr. Ellis would ever dare to call in. Let's see if he has the biblical courage and the intestinal fortitude and the theological acumen defend his work, his Magna Carta. Let's see if he'll ever call in this broadcast. I'm waiting. Well, he might be a very busy man. So maybe he can send one of his stooges. Maybe he can send his top diocesan bishop. I mean, he's got to have, I mean, among all of those bishops that he has, what, they have 1,000? I'm assuming they have 1,000 bishops. Among the thousands of bishops that they have there at the Joint College, he can't send one of those guys or gals to come and set me straight. There's not one individual willing to call the broadcast and set Radio Reformer straight. Well, that says a lot. That speaks volumes about the Joint College of African American Bishops. It just speaks volumes. Where are the theologians of that tuition? Are their doctorates for real? Do they really have earned doctorates, or did they just put that in their resumes? But it's all a crock. It's all a fabrication. I wonder. Are these degrees for real? I mean, Mr. Ellis on the website claims to have 2 doctorates. Is that for real? Is that legit? You can't tell by the book. Listen, you can't tell by Mr. Ellis's book, The Bishopric. You can't tell by his book, just can't tell, that he has an earned doctorate, because the book is an incohesive read. It was written by a person who has issues with grammar and whose sentences are just juvenile. I mean, there's no real development. There's no real theological acumen that you can see in the book. It looks to me like a cut and paste job. That's what it looks like to me. So we're waiting on Mr. Ellis to call. We're waiting for him to send one of his stooges to pony up. Well, I can't call them ponies because I wrote a book called Jackass Church Bishop. So maybe the proper term is to jackass up. Maybe that's the term, to jackass up. Instead of pony up, it's to jackass up. And my brothers and sisters, you can go to our website. You can go to paganbishops.com, www.paganbishops.com, if you want to get a heads up. If you want more info on the groundbreaking book called Jackass Church Bishops, the second book is Nehushtan Church Bishops, and the third book soon to be released is Draconian Tsunami. Draconian Tsunami. So let's see. Let's see if Mr. Ellis... it's not just that they're not answering the propositions. They're not even answering the books. Jackass Church Bishops and Nehushtan Church Bishops were released early this year. Haven't heard a word on the books. Haven't heard a word on the propositions. Haven't heard a word about anything. So I doubt very much that we're ever going to hear from the Joint College of African American Bishops. But listen, I have to continue to do my job. I have to continue to lay out these propositions to you, the people of God, to show you how bogus this organization is. My brothers and sisters, when you're dealing with the Joint College of African American Bishops, you're dealing with a bogus organization. These are fake bishops. They're not bishops of the church. They're bishops of the anti-Christian church. They are bishops of the anti-Christ's church. That's what they're bishops of. They're bishops of the anti-Christ's church, not the church of the Lord Jesus Christ. I can tell you that much. So, let me give Mr. Ellis the number so that he can call in, because, again, I always like to give the number for every single broadcast. I love to give the phone number to see if they would dare call in. The number here, now that we have everything back up and running, the number here, Mr. Ellis, is 646-564-9730, and Mr. Ellis can call, or anyone on the executive board of the Joint College of African American Bishops can call, or any member, any bishop in the Joint College. I don't care if you were made a bishop yesterday. If you're the last bishop on the rung, you can call the broadcast. I'm an equal opportunity, you know, person. I'll give you a beating if, you know, if you want to call in. I'll give you, even if you were made a bishop yesterday, I'll take you to the woodshed. I'll give you what the Bible says. I'll tell you straight up. But like one of my friends has said, don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. And, you know, I just won't, because I don't think they're ever gonna call in. So, my dear brothers and sisters, here we are. I gave Mr. Ellis the phone number, and now let me read to you proposition number 52. Are you ready, dear saints? Are you ready? Proposition number 52, the purchasing of vestments and insignia for the episcopal office proves that from its inception, the Joint College of African American Bishops was under the spiritual authority of pagan, papal, anti-Christian Rome. Again, let me read this to you. The purchasing of vestments and insignia, that little word insignia is very important in this proposition. But again, the purchasing of vestments and insignia for the episcopal office proves that from its inception, the Joint College of African American Bishops was under the spiritual authority of pagan, papal, anti-Christian Rome. Now you're saying, where did Radio Reformer get this information? Well, I'll read it to you. Right out of Mr. Ellis's book. You see, we're picking his book apart. Picking his book apart is like picking his brain. And in chapter 1 on page 17, chapter 1 is entitled, In the Beginning. Now, it so happens that in the beginning, God had nothing to do with this. But the title chapter is, or the title of the chapter is, In the Beginning, the Need. Mr. Ellis writes, one late afternoon in the summer of 1994, four men were traveling from New York to Philadelphia for the purpose of purchasing vestments and insignia for the episcopal office. While traveling, Archbishop Wilbert Sterling McKinley and Archbishop Roy Edmund Brown, both of Brooklyn, New York, along with Bishop J. Delano Ellis of Cleveland, Ohio, were discussing the need for providing assistance and training for the proliferated episcopacy within the African-American Pentecostal community. After a lengthy discussion, a telephone call was made to Bishop Paul Sylvester Morton of New Orleans, Louisiana. Bishop Morton expressed his desire to join with these men in forming this college, and Bishop Ellis was elected to preside over this venture. The man who wrote this book was elected to preside over this venture. So, here you have it. Mr. Ellis is confessing that one late afternoon in the summer of 1994, four men were traveling from New York to Philadelphia for the purpose of purchasing, vestments and insignia. It's right there. It's in the beginning. That's why Proposition 52 reads like this. the purchasing of vestments and insignia for the episcopal office proves that from its inception, remember, this chapter is entitled In the Beginning, that from its inception, the Joint College of African American Bishops is under the spiritual authority, not scriptural authority, but the spiritual authority of the pagan, papal, anti-Christian Rome. Well, I cited chapter and page for Mr. Ellis's book, and now I'm going to prove to you that from the very beginning, from the jump, as we say in the projects, from the jump, Mr. Ellis's Joint College of African American Bishops was under the spiritual authority of pagan, papal, anti-Christian Rome. What scriptures can I cite? Well, I can cite Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. It is in this chapter that Jesus launches the ministry of the apostles. Now, Mr. Ellis and his fellow bishops at the Joint College claim to be the direct descendants, the direct successors of Christ and his apostles. Well, I find that hard to believe. In fact, I find that very scripturally and historically hard to believe. Why? Well, because here we have the beginning of the apostleship. In Matthew chapter 10, in addition to Mark 3, and in addition to Luke 6, those are all parallel scriptures. If you look at Mark 3, starting at verse 13, and Luke chapter 6, starting at verse 7, they correspond, Matthew chapter 10, starting at verse 1. And when you look at all three synoptic versions of the launching of the apostolate, you do not find that Jesus gave his disciples, he gave his apostles, vestments or insignia. So I don't know where Mr. Ellis gets the idea that they are the direct successors of the apostles, because you would think that in order for the Joint College to wear vestments, to purchase insignia, you would think that Christ should have given it to the apostles, considering that Mr. Ellis and his crowd claim to succeed the apostles. Well, Matthew chapter 10, verse 1 reads, "And when he had called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them." Now, did he give them a mitre? Did he give them a Catholic? Did Jesus give them a stole? Did Jesus give them a tippet? Did Jesus give them scarlet slippers? I mean, when you look at these elevation services where Mr. Ellis is the chief consecrator, I mean, he is putting a whole bunch of junk on people. Well, what exactly did Jesus give his apostles, whom Mr. Ellis and the members of the Joint College claimed to succeed? Well, this is what Jesus gave them. When he had called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them what? What did he give them? Power. Not faggoty clothing. Not effeminate wear. No. Jesus didn't give them any of that. No. He gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out. Power to heal all manner of sickness and power to heal all manner of diseases. That's what he gave them. He gave them. In verse number 7, Jesus says to them, As ye go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the leper, raise the dead, cast out devils. Freely you have received, freely you shall give. Provide neither gold nor silver nor brass in your purses, nor scrip for your journey, neither two coats. Don't carry that closet. Don't carry, you know, they have suitcases when these archbishops travel. They have suitcases of faggot wear. That's right. But Jesus said, what did Jesus said? When you go on your journey, don't even have two coats, neither shoes nor yet staves, for the workman is worthy of his meat. Jesus just gave them power and he gave them instructions. There's no mention of vestments, of donning them with vestments, and there's no mention of giving them insignia. None. None whatsoever. So now, we know what vestments are, but a great many of you are a little confused with what is insignia. And when you read Mr. Ellis's book, you see vestments is in plural and insignia is in the singular. Let me read that to you again from Mr. Ellis's book on page 17. It says, one late afternoon in the summer of 1994, four men were traveling from New York to Philadelphia for the purpose of purchasing vestments and insignia for the Episcopal office. Well, what is insignia, you're asking? Well, let me break it down to you. But in order to let you know what it is, we have to go to a number of Roman Catholic sources, because you're not going to find this. You're not going to find this in evangelical Protestant books. Turning to the Catholic Dictionary, the third edition by Atwater, which was produced in 1958 by Macmillan Press, on page 256, the word insignia, from the Latin, signum, a sign. These are badges, ornaments, or garments distinctive of rank. Those of the bishop in the Western Church are, in other words, those of the bishop in the Roman Catholic Church are, according to the occasion, the buskin, the sandals, pectoral cross, dalmatic, the tunico, the mitre, the gloves, the ring, the pastoral staff, the rochet, the rosetta, the capa magna, the skull cap, the morse, the mantella, and the gremille veil. To those of an archbishop, add the cross and the pallium. So this is just, in other words, insignia is accessories. You know, like when women wear, men are not into accessories. Women are into accessories. My wife can't leave the house, won't leave the house without making sure she has a pair of earrings on. I don't wear earrings. I'm a man. But the effeminate clergy, and Mr. Ellis, you can call the number here. We can talk about this. We can go directly to the Greek text. Do you read Greek, Mr. Ellis? Do you read Greek? Are you capable of handling the Greek New Testament, Mr. Ellis? Dr. Ellis? You must have studied Greek when you earned your doctorate. Mr. Ellis, call the broadcast. Mr. Ellis, call. We'd like to talk to you in Greek. The number here is 646-564-9730, Mr. Ellis. Can you please call? Okay. As we wait, as we hold our breath in expectation, let us move on now to consult the Marinol Catholic Dictionary, the editor is Albert J. Nevins, and this was published in 1965 by Dimension Books in New York. Insignia, singular. Mr. Nevins tells us, as did Mr. Atwater, that the English word insignia comes from the Latin meaning signum, sign. And he writes, does Mr. Nevins, distinguishing marks of authority of office such as badges, ornaments, dress, etc. Examples of insignia would be the tiara, of the Pope. You know, the Pope has a tiara, a three-level tiara. I wrote extensively about that effeminate tiara. Now notice, the Pope wearing a tiara. I only know of little girls and prom queens and pageant queens who wear tiaras. But the Pope wears a tiara. It's a three-level tiara of the Pope. The pectoral cross, the ring of the bishop, the cassock of the priest, etc., etc., etc. In other words, these different badges, these different attachments, if you will, just speak of a person's rank. So as we read in Mr. Ellis's book, two of the men going to Philadelphia to purchase vestment and insignia, were archbishops. So they were getting the archbishop junk. And Mr. Ellis, who at the time was simply a bishop, he was getting bishop junk. He was simply getting bishop accessories, as the archbishop were getting accessories for their rank and office. Now, looking at the Catholic Dictionary of the Liturgy, published by the Catholic Book Publishing Company in New York in 1989, on page 268, insignia, pontifical insignia. What does insignia mean? The vestments and emblems worn by prelates when they officiate at the liturgical ceremony. It goes on to say Pope Paul VI simplified their number and use and reduced privileges concerning them. Example from the insignia of bishops and the Pope are the mitre. The Pope and the bishops wear mitres, gloves, rings, pectoral cross, crosiers, and the pallium. So basically these are pagan accessories, papal accessories, approved by the Pope, sanctioned by the Pope, which tell you who is a bishop, who's a priest, who's an archbishop, who's a cardinal, and who's the Pope. Now, when you go shopping for this queer wear, depending on your rank, you're only allowed to purchase certain things. There's a little booklet that tells you, okay, if you're the archbishop, you can wear this. But you see, bishops cannot necessarily wear what archbishops wear, because what archbishop wears speaks to their rank, and so forth and so on. So again, let me read proposition number 52. The purchasing of vestments and insignia for episcopal office, which we're told on page 17 of Mr. Ellis's book, chapter 1, entitled In the Beginning, The Need, we're told that four men were traveling to Philadelphia from New York for the express purpose of purchasing vestments and insignia. So what does that tell you? That from the very beginning, from day one, from the day that this monstrosity of an organization, the Joint College of African American Bishops, was conceived, from its inception, its four leaders, were already under the spiritual authority of pagan, papal, anti-Christian Rome, because all this stuff is approved by the Pope. All this stuff that we talked about, the mitre, the crozier, the cassock, the gloves, the shoes, the slippers, the pantyhose, all that stuff comes from pagan, papal, anti-Christian Rome. So if these four men who started the Joint College, which three of them were on their way from New York to Philadelphia to buy faggot wear and faggot accessories, because that's what this stuff is. Is it any wonder that you have the kind of immorality that you have in the Roman Catholic Church? Are you surprised? Mr. Ellis, can you call us? Because I'd like to review some verses with you in the original Greek. I'd like to read some verses with you. Because when you talk about these kinds of garments, Jesus himself used the word dealing with effeminate wear, Mr. Ellis. And I don't think that Jesus wanted his apostles to be wearing effeminate wear. But that's what this stuff is. These vestments and these insignia have to do with effeminate wear. Is it any wonder that Mr. Ellis encourages the men and the women in his organization to get manicures? Is it any wonder? Well, let's listen to Mr. Ellis here. Let's listen to him. And he's going to tell us how they have all this stuff about the vestments down pat. Let's listen to Mr. Ellis. I want him to tell you, and I want him to tell us, and I want him to tell the world how they've got all this stuff about the vestments down pat. Let's listen.
Every month or so, there's a new promotion, a new installation, a new consecration. Boy, we have plethora of bishops, overseers, and apostles being elevated. And I keep asking myself, for what?
And that's what the rest of the African-American church is asking themselves, because you and the other three men started this nonsense. Finally, you're asking the same questions we're asking. And for what? Why did you start this mess? Why do you perpetuate this mess? Why have you given the African-American church a Romish makeover?
And because we are so accustomed to focusing on the present, how many of us are really planning for the future of our organizations and our churches? How many of us have a succession plan?
Forget about succession plan. Are you preparing to meet Jesus at the judgment seat? That's what you need to be worrying about, Mr. Ellis. Forget about having a succession plan. You need to prepare yourself to meet Jesus at the judgment seat, because you've corrupted his church. You brought in Roman Catholicism into his church. You've leavened and corrupted and perverted his church.
I mean, a succession plan beside our sons or our daughters, our natural family, our dynastic kind of thing. Well, we need to think about it, because if we don't, our organizations, as great as they may be, will die shortly after we're off the scene. Now you tell me, isn't that a worthwhile discussion? Isn't that a worthwhile series of songs. Meet us at the Joy College this March. Go online, hurry up. collegeofbishops.org. Register. I need to see you there. We are past the rules. We got that down pat. Excuse the pat. We know how to put on vestments and plumes and chains and rings and things.
Now you see, what man of God puts on plumes? I'm using his own words. I mean, he's talking about putting on plumes. Who puts on plumes? Divas put on plumes. Peacocks put on plumes. Sissified men put on plumes. Jesus and the apostles never had plumes. I don't recall reading of Stephen, the deacon of the church, when being stoned, was wearing plumes. I don't recall reading when John the Baptist was beheaded, or even James, the brother of John for that matter, in Acts 12. I don't recall reading that John the Baptist or James the Apostle had plumes. I don't recall reading when Paul and Silas were thrown into prison in the city of Philippi that they were wearing plumes or vestments or robes, or faggot wear, or insignia, or things approved by Rome, papal, pagan Rome. I don't recall reading that they were wearing anything like that. But Mr. Ellis says, oh, we have that down pat. We, the successors of the apostles, we have that down pat.
Excuse the pat. We know how to put on down pat. Excuse the pat. I need to see you there. We are past the rules. We got that down pat. Excuse the pat. We know how to put on vestments and plumes and chains and rings and things. Some of us look like Darth Vader.
No, some of you look, all of you look like jackasses. You all look like jackasses. The number here is 646-564-9730. Check out the book, Nehushtan Church Bishops and Jackass Church Bishops, at www.paganbishops.com. These are two books that the Joint College of Bishops could never discredit or dismiss. That is proposition number 52. The purchasing of vestments and insignia. In other words, the purchasing of faggot wear and faggot accessories for the episcopal office, and of course the episcopal office of Harlot Rome, proves that the inception of the Joint College of African American Bishops was under the spiritual authority of pagan, papal, anti-Christian Rome. We wait to hear from Mr. Ellis. I will be back tomorrow with proposition number 53. And as I close this program, we have a new song. It's called Come Out of Her, My People. Come out of whom? It's coming. Come out of the Church of Rome. Mr. Ellis, you can be an end time Moses if you choose to lead, Mr. Ellis. You could be an end time Moses if you can just lead those people that you led into Rome, if you can just lead them out. It's time for God's people to come out of pagan Rome. You led them there. You and the other three men led God's people in the African American church right into Rome. And it's your responsibility, Mr. Ellis, to bring them out of Rome. If not, you're going to be held eternally responsible for leading God's people, God's virgin people, into the harlot church. Here's a song. Come out of her, my people, and the her is Babylon. God bless you. I'll be back tomorrow with more.
Judge battle.